Free is a zero tobacco nicotine pouch designed for people who want a simple, hassle-free way to enjoy nicotine without smoke, vapor, or the smell. Everything about Free is engineered for ease, fast flavor, fast effect, and fast delivery straight to your door. The strength range goes from 3 milligrams all the way up to 15 milligrams, so whether you're looking for something on the lighter side or you want maximum strength, they've got you covered. Flavors, mint, wintergreen, watermelon, which is new, plus lush, sweet, and original. Enough variety that picking a flavor feels like picking a mood. Available in single tins, mega packs, and bundles for those who like to commit. The pouches come pre-primed, so flavor and effect hit instantly. No waiting around. They're soft, flexible, sit comfortably, and the whole setup is discreet. Compact tins, zero smoke, zero vapor, perfect for meetings, commutes, or just getting through the day. You can get your instant delivery straight to your door or pick them up whenever you normally get your nicotine. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off their order at freepouch.com. That's F-R-E pouch.com with promo code LISTEN20. That's freepouch.com, F-R-E pouch.com, and use promo code LISTEN20 to get 20% off today. F-R-E, free. Strength you can count on.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
As if I need to tell anyone who is a huge fan of Home Alone, this is the great John Williams, composer, with Somewhere in My Memory, the title track to the iconic Christmas movie Home Alone. Welcome to a special edition of the Zabecast. On Christmas morning, we are talking Home Alone and Home Alone only for the next 30 minutes. And it's my pleasure to welcome on my colleagues, friends, and former 97.3 The Game teammates, Matt Miller, a man about film, and Armin Sarian, Mr. Home Alone. Merry Christmas, boys. How we doing?
Great. Merry Christmas. Nervous. Sorry, Matt.
I'm a little nervous. This is one of the first times I've got a movie conversation that I am prepared to be totally out of my league. Armin is like a historian of this movie.
I tell Matt often when we talk movies, it's rather unfair for him because he has to have a breadth and depth of knowledge of multiple things. And I have a depth of knowledge about five movies, and I hammer him with those movies only. Those are the ones I can. Home Alone's one of them, of course. So, Merry Christmas. I'm very excited to be talking with both of you guys, Zabe especially. And, I'd be doing this anyway, talking about Home Alone to anyone that would listen. So, we might as well do it on this Zabe.
I saw Armin on the street corner the other night, just yelling Home Alone facts at people, just being like, did you know that John Candy was paid very little?
Next to the guy handing out Bibles, I was evangelizing about Home Alone. And
it's all crazy Home Alone Armin out there.
Yeah.
Does he even have a family?
Do you consider yourself, Armin, a PhD in Home Alone?
I tried to consume as much knowledge as I can about it because I love it. Do I consider myself a PhD? I don't know. It's always when you grew up and there was that kid, that your friend that was really good at video games, like Halo, and he thought or Madden, he could get in some sort of national tournament. And then when he did, he got totally, absolutely dump trucked. I'm sure there are people out there that know more than me about it, but I just enjoy the movie so much and I enjoy talking about it. And I think I enjoy the time capsule it puts me in my life. And that's a big thing for any of us.
Yes, it's a time capsule thing. Miller, when did the movie come out? Do you
1990,
recall?
1990. It was the highest grossing movie of 1990. Came out, I believe, just before Thanksgiving. Yep. November 16th.
And Armin, in 1990, how old were you and where were you living?
6-year-old boy living in Greenfield, Wisconsin, where I grew up. And I remember this movie being out, you know, and my older cousins liking it. And of course, watching it. And then in the kind of in the ether of my memory, I remember this and Home Alone 2, obviously, which came out 2 years later. And Home Alone 2 had a deal with McDonald's, because by that time the movie was so big that they put a huge budget in for 2, as you know, Matt. And they had a deal with McDonald's. So I remember getting a Happy Meal toy with it at the Southridge Mall right here. This was, and you know, Matt, pre-food court, before they built this food court at Southridge Mall in Greendale right by us, they had a McDonald's that was standing alone in the mall, so you could go there. And it had, it was super interesting McDonald's, by the way. It had like designs in the tiles. Anyway, I remember eating a Happy Meal.
Was this the solid gold McDonald's?
Yeah, well, that wasn't it. It was in the mall.
Okay.
But that was another interesting McDonald's. Not to get
sorry, this is niche McDonald's, regional McDonald's talk now.
So anyway, I was 6 when it came out. I was 8 when 2 came out. And those memories are all kind of together to me. And the memories were not only it being on, but everybody liking the movie, my cousins liking it, and the sheer popularity of it. This wasn't, as you know, like Office Space or one of these things that was like a cult classic afterwards. It was super popular and lucrative in the moment, like right away. One of my favorite stories.
Highest grossing movie of the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like when Daniel Stern played Marv, Daniel Stern was saying once that like when he was wavering on doing this movie because he didn't know if he's like was negotiating for more money, didn't know. And he was excited about doing City Slickers right after this with Billy Crystal. And they were shooting City Slickers and Billy Crystal was kind of joking them every day when they were shooting it. Like, you're number one again, look at your movie. Like it kept gaining in box office over and over like the weeks and weeks. And they were totally kind of shocked by it. Right. So, and then this is like, obviously stuff Matt knows about, but like, it's like sports. You never know the magic of a team or the chemistry of a team. You can put the team on paper, right? But you never know if that success, that magic formula will come through until it does. It's that.
And as good as the team, as good as the team was, it's still the coach, right, Matt Miller? This is another John Hughes masterpiece. The man who has given us so many great films over the years.
Yeah, it's interesting because it is a little bit of John Hughes. He's the story came from him. Obviously, he has that kind of 90s aesthetic, that kind of, you know, suburban touch that he brought to all those movies, The Breakfast Clubs, The Pretty in Pinks, Your 16 Candles. He knew how to talk to a younger generation and a generation coming up.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have Chris Columbus, who would later obviously go on to do the Harry Potter movies. And, you know, he was so good at working with kids. And so much of the success of Home Alone is Macaulay Culkin and the family dynamic in that movie. And I think he really tapped into something impressive there. It's probably Chris Columbus's best movie, I would say.
Okay. And
So
Hughes wrote it and then Chris Columbus directed it.
Yeah, I believe the original idea for sure came from Hughes. If I had read right, Hughes was like on his way on a road trip and he like quick jotted down like he was like, what if you left your kid at home? And then I want to see what the official writing credits are on it, but if they brought in
the interwebs claim that he wrote Home Alone.
He wrote it. But he wrote it like, you know, he wrote it like in a weekend, I heard. Some crazy. He wrote the first.
Yeah.
The first script didn't involve the old man Marley, but that was like.
Yeah, Marley wasn't in the first original drafts. Yeah, and that was a Columbus edition because he was like, listen, we got a fun, zany comedy here. We need to bring, like, there needs to be some humanity in this thing. What if we brought in this old man character?
But what,
the
like,
South Bend Shovel Killer.
Which, right. Okay. Which is what I wanted to bring up. And Armin, I'm glad you were not around for this with Matt and I on a previous edition of the Zabecast. I committed damn near blasphemy on your favorite movie, Home Alone, which I like, but it doesn't hit me in the same feels as, say, Christmas Vacation does for whatever reason. And I dared to say that probably generational, but I said, you know, to me, Home Alone is not as much of a Christmas movie as a movie that was shot in and around Christmas. And that probably couldn't be more wrong as I share with you guys this little clip from, let me give credit to the guys who said it. This is from Father James A faith chat platform. So this is a priest talking about the essence of Home Alone.
Oh, have you heard about Jesus in Home Alone?
The character.
No, like he's in Home Alone.
In it. He makes an appearance.
Symbolically. Old man Marley is the symbol of Jesus. The first time we see the old man, what is he doing?
He's salting the sidewalk.
He's out serving the people. The second time he shows up is when Kevin's kind of doing this outward talking to himself, almost like a prayer, right? And he's saying, I'm not afraid anymore. Who shows up? Old man Marley shows up. He runs away because he's scared. That's rejection number two. Now the third time, this is when it gets really good. The third time we see him, the old man shows up in the convenience store when Kevin's trying to buy the toothbrush. He is signaled by a bell, and the bell represents...
An angel gets its wings.
So he's been symbolized with heavenly things. The old man shows up, puts his hand on top of the counter. We see a shot through the glass of his palm.
Hold on.
Look at this.
Could this be? Why didn't I see this before? This changes everything.
We see his palm, bloody. Rejection number three. Now it's becoming almost undeniable who Marley represents. The next time we see him, Kevin is in the church and he sees old man Marley. Now, this is so amazing. While the choir is singing All Holy Night, they sing, fall on your knees. What does the old man do? He stands up because he is to be worshipped. He is not the worshiper. Then there's a long beat. The choir says, oh, hear the angels' voices. And it's the first time the old man speaks in the film. And he says,
Merry Christmas.
They have this wonderful conversation that we'll talk about in a minute. But it ends with old man Marley shaking Kevin's hand. And we see a tight shot of a Band-Aid on the back of his hand. So now we've seen the front that's been damaged. And we see the back, so we know that he has been pierced through.
It's all true.
Now fast forward to the end of the movie. Kevin's called the cops.
I'm calling the cops.
He runs into the neighbor's house. He goes down into the basement. Here we see the hero's journey. Kevin is reborn. He literally runs through water and arises up, becoming a new creature. The bad guys catch him and they hang him. Another symbol. And who saves Kevin? Literally the savior of Kevin. And he represents Jesus in Home Alone. Now we go to the very end of the movie. Kevin's looking through the window, through the falling snow, beautiful music, and we see old man Marley hugging his son. Earlier, from the conversation at the church, the old man is lamenting. He's saying,
I'm not welcome with my son.
Now we have reconciliation with God and his children. That is the Christmas story. And this is one of the many, many reasons, dude, that I just love movies. Symbols and parables hidden in plain sight for all to see, and a filmmaker who uses that power for good, I think it's a beautiful thing. Jack. So what do you think, man?
I mean, I don't know.
All right, there you go. What did you think about that? Miller's already seen it, so I'm going to let you have the first crack at it.
It's Armin. Quite interesting. I don't know about like John Hughes' theology and things like that, but you could see, like, if you're inclined to study things like that, you could see the comparisons of a marked man like Jesus and things like that and how old man Marley was. I don't know. That I guess that, you know, I wish this would have been available in my college days so I could have written a paper for Theo 01 to compare this, like, the symbols
of my
favorite
movie. Did
you have
that class?
Yeah, we had theology at Marquette. We had theology classes.
Okay.
But you know, I think there are definitely that type of messages. I think the scene in the church was the message John Hughes was talking about when he was talking about, you know, how there you can be old, you can be young, but you can still have fears of life, fears of others, things you're taught to be afraid of. And the important thing is that we need each other in life to get through these things, and we can't do it alone. So I think there's something there, definitely. But I don't know. The Red Wings hat the guy had kept distracting me. I'm like, is this guy a Red Wings fan? No, it's honestly, that's really good comparison. It's absolutely a Christmas movie, Zabe. Absolutely. There's too much around it to about Christmas, you know?
What did you think about that analogy there? Or that, not analogy, but what did you think of that breakdown by
that read?
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. I'd never thought about it that way. I do always forget that part in the New Testament where Jesus bonks a guy on the head with a shovel. You know, it's easy to read past that part in the book of Matthew.
Is that Leviticus?
Yeah, that's people forget. That's in the Psalms. Yeah.
My God.
But I do think, you know, if you're making a Christmas movie, I think there's inherently obviously going to be, you know, spiritual undertones to your movie because Christmas is a religious holiday. So, you know, you are going to have, you know, Oh Holy Night, and you're going to have these meaningful moments. Now, is it intentional? I don't know. But is it a really interesting read? Absolutely. And I think it does add to the Christmassiness of the story, right? These kind of redemptive arcs, this kind of, you know, spiritual journey that goes on.
What is the scene that gets you the most, Armin, in Home Alone?
No, it's the church scene. For Laura, my wife, it's always when she comes home to see Kevin and they meet in the house, the mom, Kate McAllister. For some reason, for me, it's the church scene with old man Marley, because, you know, he knows he's going to be embarking on this huge battle to try and defend himself in this house. And he's kind of reconciling all the things he went through in with his family, with himself, with realizing what's important. And he has that moment of solace and peace. And this meeting with this guy that he thought he was supposed to fear, that gave him some sort of strength to go through it. So I think I was always the church scene, the conversation with Marley, that I liked. But that's the moment that kind of will get me. But there are other great moments in the movie that always make me laugh. But those are separate than those.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Little Armin in the movie theater, it was like the kids are laughing at Marv getting a bowling ball to the face.
Yeah.
And Armin's like, but did you see the church scene? No. It's so inspirational. Right.
Yeah. See, and that's what makes the movie so powerful, is that, like, when you're a kid, those other things, like the scene in church and the understanding of those didn't appeal to you. It was seeing Marv and Harry slip on the cars, and that was the, you know, him beating the bad guys and doing funny things and screaming into the camera. That's the fun part of the movie that you embrace, and that Macaulay Culkin was so good at. I mean, they could not have found a better child actor at the time than him, right? The camera loved him. He was precocious. He was cute, all these things. And that drew you in as a child, and that drew in the comedy and the excitement. But, you know, as you get older, it's like you don't grow out of it, because you can see these other messages in it, you know, and have fun with it that way.
All right. What was the scene for you, Miller, that gets you the most about Home Alone?
I do love I'm like Armin's wife. I really love when the mom comes home, and there's this moment of like Kevin and his mom, like, basically forgiving one another.
Each other.
Like, right. Having a moment of like silent understanding that they've screwed up and that they've done wrong by one another, and like, you know, like family does, especially around the holiday season, you know, they're just like, but we're together, and right, that's the important thing. And we've
the reconciliation, the powerful reconciliation, yeah, on all fronts.
Yes,
mother to son, and family member to family member, and everything else.
Because he knows that he took his family for granted too.
Yes.
That, like, as much as, you know, his mom and like all of them were all busy and all thinking about other things, and, you know, maybe taking Kevin for granted, Kevin was taking his family for granted. And that's the message that hit me as a kid, is, you know, this child coming to terms with the fact that, like, as much as your family can annoy you, they're essential. They're a part of you. They help you protect your house, and they certainly won't forget you again in New York City.
Spoiler, they do.
You got lost.
Blame American Airlines. Yeah, my favorite part of the movie was when the American Airlines gate agent said, take whatever's free. Can you imagine a plane now? Take whatever's free on a plane? Like,
right.
Yeah, just sit wherever you want. No, I mean,
different time.
The cool thing is that the story too with old man Marley is that what he's struggling with his family at 8 years old are the same issues you can have as an old man that's lived your entire life. Like, they both had the same struggle. It wasn't that he was too young or too old. You don't outgrow those type of journeys or discovery that you have to have, right? So that was like they found this common bond over something that they really should have nothing in similar for, but they did, because they both had this issue with their family. But like that. But I do think go ahead, Zabe. Yeah.
Do you know, Matt, that Armin put a Twitter poll out that asked who is the real villain in Home Alone? And one of the answers was American Airlines, Armin's longtime nemesis.
They blew it twice.
The uncaring airline with the unfriendly skies that ruined Armin and Laura's honeymoon getaway with canceled flight after canceled flight.
They're your great menace. That's Armin once again, little six-year-old Armin in the theater being like, the real villain in this film is bureaucracy.
It's just incredible, Miller, that Armin both hates American Airlines with a passion of 10,000 burning suns and also loves Home Alone with the same opposite love, and yet in Home Alone it's American Airlines. Of all the airlines that could have been the villain that was unhelpful in this moment of crisis.
Imagine, too, they were like the sponsor of it. They paid for that. Imagine paying for that. Like, the whole movie's based on the incompetence of us. And we're going to pay to advertise that. Like, they wanted to show the nice first class. They're using a real crystal. American Airlines, this was like a paid vehicle for them, right? And especially number two, they got money. And I remember there were ads on the VHS. It's like, American Airlines, a proud sponsor of Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. I'm like, because in the second one, he said, okay, make sure he finds his family before you leave him. Like, yeah, okay, that's nice. But this was also way pre-9/11. This is a different world that we lived
in.
I mean, this is number two, but they were slamming it from Winnetka to O'Hare in 45 minutes. Think about this now for a second, if you know anything about it. The skycap tells, they throw 14 people's luggage to the skycap. He tells them what gate it is, H-17. If you know anything about that O'Hare American gate, it splits from H&K. There's a McDonald's in the middle now. They're sprinting all the way down H and to get to the gate. No security, no nothing. The skycap takes all the bags. It's so crazy. I often defend these movies as having no plot holes, but there are some small ones. Also, what is Kate McAllister doing flying to Scranton? That was totally performative because she felt her own guilt. She went from Paris to Dallas to where the hell am I? And the guy goes, Scranton. What are you going to do in Scranton to get to Chicago? Dallas is a major hub. Chicago is the most major hub for American Airlines. You're more likely to find a nonstop from Dallas to Chicago than you are going to Scranton. I don't know if that was just funny that he wrote it in Scranton. That's where she met Gus Polinski, John Candy. Makes no sense. Let's also remember my favorite thing is that it was a nice guy doing a good deed. A nice guy from Wisconsin doing a good deed to a Chicagoan to get her home to her family.
That's right. If
this was reversed, would that happen? Would somebody from Chicago and someone from Milwaukee? No.
In a million years,
Kenosha, the Kenosha Kickers, Gus Polinski, the Polka King of the Midwest. The Polka King of the Midwest right here.
Let's oh, wow. Right. We have a prop now.
That's so good.
Armin just turned into Charlie Day and It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, just like with all the threads behind him. He's just like, it all leads to Scranton.
Right. Okay, so the fun fact about John Candy, he told John Hughes, his buddy, he's like, I'll give you a day, I'll shoot this for you. He kept them on set for 23 hours. I love that.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters' 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Exactly. All right, Miller, are there plot holes in this movie? This is a hotly debated thing.
I'm sure there are, as every movie has continuity errors and stuff like that.
Not continuity, plot holes.
Yeah,
meaning, why would they do this or not do that?
Well, it's a movie about people acting illogical in the holiday season. So, A, first of all, that's your ultimate plot hole kind of, you know, insulation thing. It's just being like, listen, these are hassled parents. This is a hassled family trying to organize. They're going to make mistakes. I mean, you can talk about the plot holes of, like, a child brutally murdering robbers and, like, be like, these thieves, the wet bandits, would be dead on the ground after, what? Like, a few of those pranks.
Right,
like,
right.
These people have been brutally mutilated by Kevin McAllister at the end of the movie. But I know there's always been the one thing about, like, oh, did you notice the ticket in the garbage can? And that's why. And it's like, yeah, that's why that insert shot is in the movie. Like, they didn't show you a random garbage can just because they needed to hit, like, a runtime. That was important information.
But they did plan for almost everything. The phone lines were out, so they couldn't just call home. The rest of the block was on vacation. The Murphy kid was counted. He came across the street. You know, most of them were accounted for. You know, the only thing I can think of is at the end of the movie, he calls the police. My name is Murphy. My house is being robbed. So at some point, the phone lines are fixed. I'm trying to remember if they made a reference to that now, and they must have at some point. Also, they were great, like, one-bit moments. Like, they did call the police, but they had the incompetent policeman, Larry Hankin, who also played the fake Kramer in Seinfeld. He's a great character actor. He played Heckles and Friends. He was the one with the donut talking about the household accident, and he got the donut to stick on the receiver. There's so many good things in the movie that, like, I don't know were intentional or planned for, that it just came together perfectly. So they did try those things. Yeah.
I sent this to Armin, Matt. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but this was a recent SNL bit in which they cast Ariana Grande as Kevin talking about the plot holes in the movie.
Mom? Oh, Kevin. Merry Christmas. I'm so sorry, honey.
She's so tiny, Ariana Grande.
I miss you so much.
But where's everyone else?
Oh, they couldn't make it, sweetie. I'm sorry. They wanted to, but...
Kevin! Kevin, my boy! You're all right!
Hey, barf nuts. Burn the place down.
Barf nuts.
Wait a minute. How did you all get home?
Oh, we took the morning flight. Remember the one you didn't want to wait for?
I've been awake for 72 hours.
Okay. That's the first one right there. Can you explain that for those that don't know the movie?
What's She's that? Been awake what? For a really long time.
Yeah.
The mom. Though I think we can assume with movie magic that she probably got some sleep, like, in between edits and stuff like that.
I thought she said the one that I couldn't wait for.
Yeah,
like, initially
in the movie, they offered her a flight back to from Paris to Chicago on
the next morning,
on Friday morning, 2 days away.
Yeah.
So like, I can't wait that long to get back. Okay. I had to come up with something else. So they all took the Friday morning booking. That was the first one available, which is plausible on Christmas. Okay, that part's plausible.
Plausible. But it's American. They can fuck up anything. So that's the most realistic part of the movie, Armin. It's American Airlines.
That's right.
Who knows what kind of fuckery they might engage
in. That's the most realistic part. I mean, that's
exactly.
A 2-day delay. So.
All right, here
you
go.
What did you do the whole time you were alone, Kev?
Oh, just hung around.
I've been awake so long, I'm legally insane.
All right. Well, now we have plenty of time to hear about Kevin's little adventures.
Oh.
Now let's all put our coats away.
Wait, Dad! I forgot to take down the...
Oh, God!
I'm gonna be sick! Oh.
No, not the phone.
All right, I gotta stop it here because.
So you get the point. You get the point of the sketch.
You get the
though,
point.
Right?
You get the point. It's almost blasphemous to have such a bloody, gory, horrific "what if" that, you know, would have been the case. But what do you think of that SNL bit?
Well, I thought it was funny. It is true that he would have had to do a lot of cleaning up. Like, you think about all the cleaning up he would have had to do. Like, yeah, especially the tar on the stairs.
The de-booby trapping of the house.
Some of it wouldn't have been hard. Like, actually, in the first one, the booby traps were a lot less outlandish than the second one. The second one were so outlandish. He electrocuted Marv. He basically blew up the whole house. The first one is like, he puts ice on the stairs and he heats up the doorknob. That stuff's not crazy. Yeah. Now, hooking up the blowtorch or whatever, yes, but you take that down. It's the tar on the stairs. How do you clean up a stair full of tar? I don't know.
That's going to be a tough one right there. Yeah. For sure.
I do want to say, unsung hero of Home Alone 2 is not Home Alone 2, but Home Alone, 2 is the stunt people and the stunt coordinators behind this movie. Because, again, this is pre-CGI, or at least certainly pre-good CGI. So you've got actual dudes, you know, pulling off these kind of like pratfalls and figuring out how to do stunts like the sled stunt down the stairs, which I read a really interesting piece where they said like how they pulled that off was they like painted the sled to look like the stairs. So that way it's going a lot slower than it seems and it's a lot more controlled than it's
interesting.
Yeah. But like, and like Marv, the scene with the tarantula, he's not screaming in that scene. Like, he's fake screaming because he didn't want to, like, upset the actual live tarantula on his face. So they had to dub in Marv's famous scream in that moment. And it's just like, it is like the alchemy of that movie is kind of crazy. And I can see why, you know, a studio was like, yeah, we're only going to pay so much for this because we don't know if this is going to work. This strangely violent slapstick holiday movie. We'll let someone else make this for the
all the stunts were real stunts, and it set those guys up to be like famous in the stunting world because they did all these falls and all these things. Is pretty impressive, and they're doing it in the middle of the night in Chicago, right? So it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing stuff.
In like a high school, they built, I think, the inside of the inside of the house was a high school. The outside was the outside.
Yeah, the inside was built in a swimming pool at a high school because they were going to flood the set. And so therefore I saw a video showing them building the whole set inside a swimming pool for it to be flooded.
Yeah.
And some of it's just practical too. I mean, a lot of times people don't shoot on location just because like to get the camera angles you need and to get all the lighting and equipment and stuff like that, you got to be blowing out walls and stuff like that. Right. And you can't do that in someone's actual home unless they give you like insane permissions. But they had to build so much of that.
What I love about Hughes is he was always true to his hometown. He didn't want to be part of the Hollywood thing. He didn't want to live there. He didn't want to be part of the studios. He wanted to be able to like shoot his movies the way he felt and the way he saw them in his own level of comfort. And he embraced that whole North suburban shore of Chicago, and they all worked for that. And they really, because of that, I think had an authentic feel about it. And that
they
was a
super
hallmark.
Do.
Yeah.
I think that it's so important. Like a lot of the movies we see, I mean, it's the Hallmark thing where like Hallmark movies take place in Nowheresville, you know, sentimentality town, you know, like they, none of them exist in recognizable places. They all exist in, you know, fake worlds, whereas Home Alone and a lot of the comedies of yore feel like they take place in real places. And as a result, they have a little bit more meaning to them.
All right, I'd be remiss if I didn't include a note about the home itself, Armin.
Yeah, 671 Lincoln Avenue in Winnetka. I've been there a few times. If you go, it's super busy on Christmas. They shut down the streets now because of how many people go there, but it's actually a much smaller street in when you see it in person, it's so smaller feeling than it is because it's a movie. That house obviously was scouted by the location, and it's a beautiful house, but it's just been sold, right? I think
just been sold, and the center hallway has been modernized to the point where it doesn't look anything like the movie, but apparently the new owners are going to restore the center hallway back to what it was in the movie.
Yeah, there was a similar deal with the Full House house where they were trying to make it an Airbnb. The previous owners kind of rejected any notion of embracing this as the movie, so they made it really hard for people to see it and stuff. I always thought that somebody would be smart to embrace it and use it as sort of like a revenue stream for people that wanted to see it or take pictures or even Airbnb it at one point. But they did a lot of work on the house too. It's super updated. And there's like, if you look at the listing online, it's 671 Lincoln Avenue in Winnetka, even though they say Boulevard in the movie. There's like a gym and a half court basketball court in the basement. It's a small plot. You think, how do they fit all this stuff? It's a big, crazy house. It's beautiful. But there's also Badger, Wisconsin Badger, like
logos
theming on the court. So whoever owned it past was some sort of Badger alum or Badger booster or something like that.
That's kind of, well, even though you're a Marquette guy, it's good that there's a Wisconsin guy that has grabbed this piece of Chicago Kana.
The connection is cool because the updates are inside are all like that millennial white and gray, but they want to put that garish kind of Christmas wallpaper. It'd be smart somehow to do it. But if you're going to do it, you have to use it as a revenue stream. Either let people take pictures or do an Airbnb or something.
But the neighbors don't want the traffic, man. The neighbors don't want people coming in.
Because if you want weirdos coming by.
It's increased in that during the internet era, whereas like people knew about it, but I'm sure it wasn't like this, say, 15 years ago. But as the movie's grown in popularity, especially internationally, there's a line of people on Christmas to take pictures, and the police have to, like, you know, put barricades up and stuff. And it's, you hear so many languages being spoken in that line because we go there as much as we can. It's like,
really,
people are flying in from places to go see this play. It's amazing. And I would imagine because of the internet, it's just grown in popularity. And all these content creators are there to shoot like film location stuff, you know? So
yeah,
it's amazing.
It's a whole ecosystem there. What a movie though.
Can I say one more thing? And this is to Matt, and it's, don't take this personally. It's not meant to be. What I love about this movie too, is it always reminded us that even the greatest of movie reviewers, of critics, which I consider Siskel and Ebert to be like the pantheon of those two guys, it shows that it's still, art is still subjective. Roger Ebert famously hated these two movies. He thought they were terrible. He consistently gave them bad reviews, and Gene would just look at him and shake his head, but Roger Ebert never gave up on that. And not only that, when Home Alone 3 came out, which was that crappy remake with a different kid.
It's so bad.
Roger Ebert rolled up and said, now we finally have a Home Alone movie that makes sense. He claimed it was the best of the three. He said it was much better than the first two. He would not back down. He would not back down.
So he was trolling. So Ebert pretty much trolled the whole franchise, claiming the first two were junk. Third one, which was crap, was actually the only one that was any.
He did not believe they were quality movies. He didn't understand why people thought they were enjoyable. So art is always subjective. Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel were the creme de la creme, a par excellence of movie reviewing from two papers in Chicago. And even Roger Ebert didn't like it, and he never backed down from that. So I love that art can still be subjective, Matt, for critics.
Oh, 100%. No critic is 100% right. No critic is 100% objective. But that's what makes it fun, like you said. It's the subject. I mean, those guys talking about the Jesus symbology. In the movie. Like, it's very cool that we can all have these conversations. Even 35 years later, we're still talking about Home Alone and what it means.
Merry Christmas, boys. Thank you for this. This was a lot of fun, we will talk again soon.
Great, you filthy animals.
You filthy animals.
I hope you didn't just pack crap, Jeff.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.